Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Gastola. I'm joined by my co-host, Rania Kalik, and welcome to the Unauthorized Disclosure podcast. And we're pleased to be joined this week by Liz Oliva Fernandez, who is with Belly of the Beast. It's an independent media organization or project that's focused on the U.S. and Cuba, and we'll be discussing U.S. policy toward Cuba, the U.S. government's policy. Liz is presenting or has put together two fabulous documentaries, Uphill on the Hill and Hardliner on the Hudson, which we'll be getting into. So thank you for joining us, Liz.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And maybe begin, since we haven't had you on the show before, by introducing yourself and speaking about your work with Belly of the Beast and traveling from Cuba to the United States to bring attention to what U.S. policy is doing to Cuba.
Okay, thank you for that. Well, my name is Liz Oliva Fernandez. I'm 30 years old. I work for Belly of the Beast since 2020. We start with a docu-series that the name is The War on Cuba, because we want to explain the impact that the sanctions has on the real people in Cuba. Because many times when we listen to talk about the sanctions, to talk about embargo, blockade, whatever you want to call it, they just say that the sanctions is affecting only the government. It's the main focus, like affecting the government. And that's a lie. And that's a lie that many people doesn't know. And they don't understand how the sanctions affect the people. So The War in Cuba, our first documentary, tells stories about a specific people affected by the sanctions. I'm talking about Ernesto, Dailen, Roxana, like people with a name and a face. Someone from, not only from the United States, but from the world, can be related and feeling empathy for that person. So, but at that time, that was between 2020 and 2021, 22. We didn't have the opportunity to explain why, to explain what is behind that policy. So, but any of those answers are in Cuba, because the sanctions are not like internal thing that the Cuban government is doing to the Cuban people. The sanctions are all are something that are coming from outside. And this is not like any other country around the world. The sanctions are coming from the United States, one of the most powerful countries around the world. So Reed Lindsay is the director of Belly of the Beast. He's a US citizen. He always talk about how US Western journalists come into the South and the global South to tell stories. And they call it parachute journalists, because they just jump in there and they hire a fixer, someone who can explain the things for them, and they can explain the things for the world. But they don't know the reality. They don't understand what's going on and the cause and the background, the history behind all the things. So he's like, why we are not doing parachute journalists the other way around? Why are not taking Liz Oliva Fernandez from Cuba, who has been affected by the sanctions the whole life, here, her family and everything, and take it to the United States to try to discover what's going on. So we did it. It wasn't easy. It isn't easy for a Cuban to get a visa to go to the United States. Forget about a tourist visa. That's impossible. It's like a job visa for that. I remember that at that time the embassy was closed and they are not working in visa. So I have to ask a visa in Cuba to go to Colombia, to come back to Cuba to go to the United States. So it was a long trip, not only because the distance and the hours flying between another country from another, but also like preparing, sending the things in order to make it possible. And we did it in 2023. we shooting no one but two documentaries that, as you mentioned at the beginning, is Harlan and the Hudson, Up Here on the Hill, that is our work there than trying to explain who is behind that policy, what they want about this policy. Not only, it's not focused only about the sanctions, because since a few years ago, Cuba is again the state sponsor of terrorism list. So we bring that to the table too, because most of the people don't understand what makes you Cuba being a list that the United States says has sponsored terrorism. And what is the effort that list has on the Cuban people too?
You know, I want to hear more about the analysis here. But I'm curious, given that you did get to visit the U.S., Liz, what was your impression as like a Cuban from this country that's been strangled by this, you know, the U.S. for so long? Actually getting to, I'm sure you've seen the U.S. like in Hollywood films and on TV, but to actually visit and to have interactions and to like walk around a place like New York City, what was your impression of this place? Were you surprised? Did all of the sort of stereotypes you had in your head, were they reinforced or the opposite? I'm curious about your experience and what you thought as you reflected on it.
I think that the only surprise that I had was that there is no one United States. I was expecting just only unique United States, like the typical thing. And I was surprised by the fact that there are multiple United States inside of the United States. So I wasn't expecting that. And also, it's really overwhelming for me. That's the first time that I went to the United States, and this is a country with a lot of stimulations. Imagine coming to Cuba. If you have been in Cuba, you realize that we live in a bubble. We don't have advertising. Everything is calm, and you don't have any stimulation outside of like people are focusing on people. No, like it's I don't know how to explain that, but it's quite different. So like being forced to speak in English 24/7. dealing with, I was doing journalists in a language that is not my language, trying to get interviews with powerful people, trying to, and that's important. And for me, that's the main preoccupation, not the main worry that I had at that time, because you know, as a journalist, that if you are asking maybe difficult, uncomfortable questions, this person, the subject, can like trying to get around your question and answer whatever they want. And I was worried because I was doing that in English, and I was worried about they use the language to dismiss my question or to dismiss my message or something. So I was really anxious about that thing. Also, it's not the same. The culture is not the same. The people doesn't respond in the same way. They don't act in the same way. The words that in Spanish may mean something in English have other contexts. So it was really complicated for me. And I wasn't doing a pleasing journalist. I wasn't like doing, okay, whatever you want to say, I don't care. Take the mic. So that was really difficult. Also was, and I was like working, we were working a lot like crazy because the visa has a time. So, and only one entry. So you need to be sure that when I came back to Cuba, you have everything you need, because I couldn't come back again. So I think there was a lot of pressure, but also I think I feel really welcomed by the people. I understand the complexities. I come back a second time to the United States for a tour. We spent more than 50 cities across the United States. So I saw a lot of the United States. Mm. And also, I always say my best thing from the United States is people. Because when you are watching news, for example, like because my job, I need to like watching news. You see, sometimes you see like silly videos on Instagram, like all the American scenes, like be silly and stupid. And that's not true. And that's not true. And the first city that shows me that there is different is Washington, D.C. and U.S. street people. That when I ask questions about sanctions, about terrorism list, they knew. And they knew a lot. And that was, I wasn't expecting that. Okay, maybe you know about Cuba, mojitos, Fidel Castro, Baradero, regime, dictatorship, whatever you want. But I wasn't expecting more than that. But people know. And people know not just about the sanctions, the people know that the sanctions is affecting. I remember a guy that say sanctions is violence, and I was, what? Because this is, was an interview outside of Metro, and you're talking to me about sanctions is violence? Who are these people? Mm-hmm. I want to know more about these people. Of course, I know that all the United States not like that. I in my opinion, in my perspective, maybe I'm wrong, a lot of this have to do because Washington, D.C. is a Black city, because Black populations in the United States has been, they know by experience what the U.S. government is capable to do. I think they have like a biggest empathy what's going on with in Cuba and also in other countries.
I believe that's a really good way of putting it. And you do a fantastic job presenting these documentaries. And I'll say, as you know, a white American who is following you, nobody else has given me a tour of my own country to explain why U.S. policy is the way that it is toward Cuba. And so I thank you for taking the time to travel to the U.S. to try and put a camera in the face of some of the more influential politicians in the United States who are doing this to Cuba. And as you make it clear, it goes both directions. We are being deprived. United States or Americans are being deprived access to Cuba. It's extremely difficult. They try and frighten us, as you cover in your documentary. Then, of course, there's the more glaring fact that there's an inflicted or created humanitarian crisis in Cuba that affects everyone there, like you and your family and friends. So what if we show, as we've been saying, there are two documentaries. I want to show the hardliner on the Hudson trailer so people can see this preview of what you've done. It's very professional. I'm very impressed by what Belly of the Beast has put together here. So let's go ahead and show this to people so they can see what we're discussing, get a flavor of this film, and then I'll get your reaction to working on, you know, this one in particular, which covers Senator Bob Menendez.
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm from Havana, Cuba, but right now I'm in Hudson County, New Jersey.
This is Union City, New Jersey.
Plus, at surface, there's a strain of violence, of terrorism.
There was an explosion.
¿Cómo se sintió en ese momento?
Terrifying.
No Hudson County politician is as powerful or notorious as Bob Menendez.
They run as one party. There's no dissent, like a mafia.
Si yo sé que ustedes van a venir aquí a hablar de Cuba nada más, yo no hubiera aceptado esto.
Bob Menendez is a money-making machine when it comes to fundraising.
Yo soy cubano.
Soy cubano.
Cubano. Cubano.
¿Y aquí en New Jersey corrupción?
Donde más político corrupto hay.
Todas las noticias dicen cuál es el senador más corrupto que existe.
Breaking news, New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez has been indicted by a federal grand jury. Three counts of conspiracy to commit bribery, extortion, and fraud.
Hola, Senador Menendez. Hola. Mi nombre es Liz Olivia Fernandez. Soy periodista independiente de Cuba.
So tell us, Liz, tell us about working on this one in particular.
Well, that was between New York and New Jersey. And that's funny because I said that I've been forced to speak in English 24/7, but in New Jersey it's totally different. I think the language that dominates New Jersey, Union City particularly, is Spanish. I was surprised to find so many people from around the world, not just from Latin America, and in Union City. And this is one of the, you say, and you asked me a few minutes ago, I was like being like walking around New York. That was one of the things that I like the most from United States in general, but also about these cities, that they have people from around the world, and these people are bringing their cultures with them. So that's amazing. I really enjoy doing New Jersey because we have a goal. So Bud Menendez past, background, everything. So I was really, because in comparison with the other one, we are like trying to get more about by the administration, but by the administration, it's more than one person. But here in New Jersey, it's just focuses on Bud Menendez. So our goal is Bud Menendez. We need to know, we need to have information about this guy. Getting interviews with these people are really tiring. Like, and it's funny because you will think that in a country of a freedom of speech, a journalist could get in touch with politicians easy. They answer media like questions or whatever, but they don't. But at least not in my case. And I was thinking about, okay, maybe it's because it's me. I'm a foreign journalist asking questions, but I have the privilege to talk to another journalist from New Jersey. He's like, well, it's really, really difficult that these people will just appear on the camera and answer your questions about whatever you want to ask for. For me, it was like, what? This is not the things that I critique to Cuba, to Cuban government? So what's going on here? I really enjoy to talk to the people of New Jersey, but also to talk to the people who are pushing for a change. Well, trying to push for a change in New Jersey and New Jersey policy. I was really surprised about the machine thing in New Jersey. I didn't know about the machine. When the first time I remember in the interview, someone told me about, oh, because a machine. And I was thinking about like literally a machine. I was like, okay, what is a machine and how the machines works in polity, in politics? And when they explained me, it's like, no way. No way, this is better than I was. This is better than I was thought when I was in Cuba. And when I say better, and it was like, it was more interesting for me as a Cuban journalist, that was more dark than it was, I think. And there is a lot of, I don't know, it's really cynical and hypocritical because, when they talk about Cuba, these people has a lot of to say about democracy, about freedom of speech, about everything. They have a lot of opinions when it comes to Cuba. But you don't find that opinions about United States in general, not about New Jersey in particular. And the most of the things that they critique in Cuba, you can find them by a lot. But people doesn't know that. For example, when I was in Congress, and this is not in Holland and the Hudson, but it's part of Up Here on the Hill documentary, I discovered that for you don't have access to public health care in the United States, being US citizens, like open public, like a free health care for everybody. There's always like something like a technician or something. By the members of Congress has access to health care for free the entire life, just for serving one period in Congress. So no discussion about, say, how is possible that they actually have public and free health care and quality health care for their entire life, and they don't want that for the people who put them on Congress. So, and nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about, like, Washington, D.C. doesn't have any autonomy. That there is, like, they have, like, every decision that is going through Washington, D.C., they have, like, going through the Congress. They don't have any autonomy. They don't have nothing. And they paid tax, a lot of tax and contributions, and they just never come back to the D.C. So it's like half a colony. So the capital of the United States of America is like a colony. And nobody's talking about that. So there is a lot of things that maybe I'm laughing, not because I'm happy for that. I'm laughing because the irony, the whole thing, the way that the system works.
I thought that people who listen and watch our show would be interested to see how somebody who was in Congress handled a Cuban journalist, but also somebody who's not from here. You're a guest of the United States, and you asked to speak to him. So let's see how this former representative treated you.
I grew up in Hudson County, proud of it.
Alvio Cires was a mayor of a town in Jackson County before serving in Congress for 17 years. Then he left Congress to run for mayor again. If this sounds unusual, it's because it is.
¿Por qué está presentándose de nuevo como alcalde después de abandonar el Congreso?
Bueno, porque cuando yo me fui de aquí, yo quería terminar de hacer una biblioteca, porque la biblioteca de este pueblo está muy vieja. Y nos faltó por hacer una escuela, y quería hacer un parque en el waterfront. So, cuando yo terminé el Congreso, me embullé para terminar los proyectos que yo tenía en mente la primera vez que yo era alcalde aquí.
Nosotros nos habían comentado varias personas que usted había vuelto aquí a presentarse como alcalde porque Menéndez necesitaba el asiento en el Congreso para su hija,
no,
¿verdad?
No. Eso es tontería. Yo hubiera quedado en el Congreso, yo sacaba 77, 78% de los votos. Lo que me gustó a mí que fue Menéndez y que fue candidato, que me sustituyó, pero no hubo pacto ninguno, nada de eso.
¿Me puede decir cuáles han sido sus logros en el Congreso?
Yo siempre luché para los derechos humanos en los países como Venezuela, Nicaragua y los países que abusan de los derechos humanos.
¿En el caso de Cuba?
Y bueno, iba a decir en Cuba, claro, siempre me he luchado para el abuso que existe en Cuba con el pueblo de Cuba por muchos años. No solamente cuando era congresista, sino antes de ser congresista. Esta área es muy activa de la comunidad cubana.
¿Usted cree que existe una diferencia entre los cubanoamericanos, demócratas y republicanos en Cuba?
Nosotros no teníamos diferencia ninguna cuando venía a Cuba.
¿Usted cree que las sanciones ayudan al pueblo de Cuba?
Yo creo que ayudan a ponerle presión al gobierno. Creo que deben ponerle sanciones. Si tú quieres quitarle las sanciones, ¿qué va a hacer Cuba para obtener eso? Si ellos no van a ceder, yo opino que las sanciones deben mantenerse. El hecho de que yo luchaba por Cuba es una cosa que yo llevo en mi corazón.
Claro.
Y Menéndez también. Como llegamos a donde llegamos, tenemos la voz para decir lo que está pasando en Cuba.
¿Cuál es la relación de ustedes dos? ¿Cómo usted lo ve a él?
Yo como uno de mis mejores amigos. Jugamos golf juntos y todo y participamos en diferentes eventos.
¿Cómo la influencia que tuvo usted cuando estaba en el Congreso y actualmente tiene el senador Menéndez?
Porque nosotros hemos logrado que la administración hable de los derechos humanos y el abuso que hay en Cuba.
¿Antes no se hablaba de eso?
No, si nosotros no estábamos ahí presionando al gobierno. No.
¿Qué pensó usted cuando Obama restableció la normalización entre Cuba y Estados Unidos?
El hecho de que Obama haya ido a Cuba. Sí, un gesto muy bonito, pero Obama trató su mejor lo que pudo, pero no dio ningún resultado.
Pero Cuba estaba floreciendo en ese momento. Yo estaba ahí cuando, estaba cuando sucedió.
¿Y por qué, y por qué hay tanta gente que quiere salir de Cuba? Si Cuba está floreciendo tanto, ¿por qué hay tanta gente que quiere salir de Cuba?
Pues después, cuando llegó Trump y la crisis, el COVID, las sanciones, que retrocedimos. Le digo, como lo vivimos del otro lado, como todo el mundo iba a Cuba, todo el mundo quería visitar, los cruceros.
Y mejoró a Cuba.
En ese momento,
mejoró al Partido Comunista, no mejoró a Cuba. El pueblo cubano no mejoró. Porque en Cuba, si tú no eres parte del Partido Comunista, tú no puedes participar en nada.
Yo no soy parte del Partido Comunista.
No, pero yo creo que nosotros no tenemos la misma posición sobre Cuba.
No, ajá, yo no digo la misma posición a partir de las vivencias que hemos tenido diferentes. Yo estaba en ese momento de Obama. usted lo ve como lo ve aquí, yo le estoy contando como lo veo.
Sí, pero yo lo que veo es que toda la pregunta tiene que ver con Cuba. Yo pensé, si yo sé que ustedes van a venir aquí a hablar de Cuba nada más, yo no hubiera aceptado esto.
Pero si usted prefiere hablar de Cuba, usted lucha
no,
por Cuba.
No, tú eres la que está haciendo la pregunta.
Claro, pero usted tiene un rol decisivo en la política cubana, en el Congreso, ¿no?
La tuve, sí.
Entonces, por eso estamos hablando de Cuba, porque era su rol con su carrera política.
Sigue la entrevista, porque si no vamos a terminar esto pronto.
¿No es eso lo que usted hacía?
Sigue la entrevista, si no vamos a terminar esto pronto. Bueno, vamos a terminar esto, que tengo gente allá afuera esperando.
He's such an asshole. Sorry, that's just like so... All these people who want freedom and democracy and, oh, we want these countries to be how we want them to be. The second you ask them a hard question, they're like, I'm leaving. I don't agree with you. Sorry. That's amazing. What a jackass. I'll say it. You're well done. That was really well done. You like stayed so calm.
Thank you. Well, I have to try to compose myself because it's difficult because the only thing was like, he said like, no, why people are leaving? And I say, okay, they're leaving now. But at that time, people were staying there. Right. So it's different. And also he said, no, this is just a comedy party thing. I said, no. I was there. You don't. I was there. I'm telling you, like, my experience. The thing is, they can't argue with someone who thinks different. They don't want to, because I have a lot of friends with different perspective about Cuba and many things, but we can have conversations. We can argue about something. Because that's okay. This is your point of view. This is my point of view. Okay, that maybe this is what I'm saying is interesting. I haven't considered that point of view, but let's talk about that. Because as a Cuban, we want the best for the Cubans, right? But it's not with this. It's like you are with me or against me. There's not something like dissent. Dissent. They talk a lot about dissent in Cuba and how Cuban government react to dissent. Well, that's how US politicians react to dissent.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, and so we didn't say much yet. And before we conclude the interview, I think it's important to emphasize that the first documentary we mentioned, Uphill on the Hill, is really about how Joe Biden has come into the White House and allowed everything that Donald Trump undid. You know, say what you will about President Barack Obama. I don't actually know your personal view. You're welcome to share. Some of it comes through in both of these documentaries. I think as a Cuban, you have to be fairly optimistic about what his administration was trying to do to specifically open up a relationship between the U.S. and Cuba so that, you know, no longer was there this embargo or blockade. And so you have in this Uphill on the Hill an exploration, an examination of why Joe Biden hasn't done anything to undo Donald Trump destroying the openness, the free exchange of people between U.S. and Cuba that Obama was trying to kickstart.
You tell me that, and I was thinking about the moment that when Gonzalez said, I think I was working with the Biden administration at that time, like, Biden administration is not Obama. Biden is not Obama, who is waiting, like, this change in policy. They're wasting their time. That's clear. Biden is not Obama. And I think that when I say us as a Cuban, we thought, okay, this guy was part of Obama administration. He was there when Obama and Raul Castro normalized relations between both countries. His wife spent time in Cuba as a part of the delegation. So he knows. He knows better. He's going to do it better. But he don't. I've seen so far, nothing has been changed. Why? Well, many people say that Menendez, and I will add, okay, that Menendez maybe is the biggest single reason but also it's an excuse. It's easy to say, okay, no, because we are dealing, we need bulls, we need divided Congress, we need Democrats maintain together. But this is bullshit. In the same, like, if he wants to do, like, just something simple with the state sponsor of terrorism list, he can do it. He doesn't need the Congress for that. He can do it. And it's something that takes nothing in question of time, in terms of time. And he's not doing nothing. Why? Well, I think this is not the only question that he needs to ask, like, what is going on with Gaza? So it's, for me, when you, like, in Cuba, when people have, like, a really specific image about the United States, what the United States is, because the media, because they control the media, they control the social medias too. They have specific programs who are designed to fill the feed of Cuban people in Cuba with the content that they want us to see or to watch. So when you come to Cuba and come back, that this is not something usual, because most of them are forced to stay there because they can't travel back and forth, because there is no normal relation between both countries. People ask, okay, because they have a CDA, they have democracy, freedom of speech, and everything. And when it's plain that millions of people are doing demonstrations trying to end the war, the genocide in Gaza, they say, like, yeah, but why the government is not listening to them? And asking the same with Cuba. Why the government, the U.S. government, is not listening to not the people in Cuba who actually live in Cuba, but the most of the people in the United States that want to end the sanctions and also to take Cuba out of the terrorism list, because it doesn't have any sense for me. Why? So I'm not the one who needs to and answer that. I think something that the whole system in the United States have to answer to the U.S. citizens, why are not listen to the people of the United States?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Maybe we need maybe America needs a little bit of regime change, honestly. I'm curious, can you, before we wrap up here, I'd like to know, like, what's the situation in Cuba right now? I know, yeah.
God. Yeah, well, it's really sad. It's really frustrating for me because I always say, I lost my entire community, and because they, young people, they want to opportunities, and we don't have opportunities in Cuba anymore. We have one of the best healthcare systems in the world, but we don't have raw materials, instruments. We don't have nothing. So what are you doing in a country like that? What are you doing in a contest like that? How do you save a contest like in a country for a situation like that? I don't know. It's like the most of the people are focusing on surviving day by day. There is a lot of hopeless in the whole thing because you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. This is not something that is coming because it doesn't depend on us. It's not. So how you fix it? You can't. So everybody's waiting what is happening. United States, the next November, what is happening with the elections? Who is going to win? Is Biden finally do something about Cuba or is not? Who is going? Is Biden having a second term or is not? So what's going on? What is going to happen in your country and how that thing is going to affect in mine? That's the entire thing we are waiting. And that's really, that's not the kind of future that I want for Cuba. I think that we have been fighting a lot in order to have sovereignty. We have autodetermination. So waiting for something to happen in order to see how it's going to affect us is terrible. And it's terrible for us who actually are used to like it take care of our own destiny.
I think that's something that everybody should be thinking about. And I don't think that a lot of people in the United States do appreciate how much U.S. policy affects Cuba, but also, you know, a lot of other countries that do not have the self-determination or they're robbed of their sovereignty to make their own choices. So as we conclude, can you tell people what you'd like them to do to support this work, this project, and where they can find these documentaries, where they will be if people want to watch them?
Of course. It's pretty easy. You just need to subscribe and follow Belly of the Beast Cuba in all the platforms, YouTube, X, Instagram. We are just starting in TikTok now. Because it's difficult for us to try to visualize these questions, because type in your search, Cuba. There are going a lot of contents about hungry, misery, dictatorship, regime, blah, 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 blah. But there is not positive stories about my own country. And Cuba is beyond of that, if you know better. But that's the kind of things that they want to portray us as a failed state, that they want to portray us as a failed society. And it's not. So that's why you can find contents about medical brigades in Cuba, about Cuba doing solidarity around the world, about people in Cuba being resilient, being tough, being badass. You couldn't find that stories in the mainstream media outlets in the United States. And that's the kind of stories that Belly of the Beast Cuba are interesting to cover, and also interesting to show the world that is more than Cuba that the mainstream media outlets want you to know. And also the premiere of the documentaries, I'm so sorry, I won't forget that, May 13 and May 20. May 13, Harlan and the Hudson, that's the first day of the trial against Menendez. So it's going to be trending topic. May 20th is Uphill on the Hill.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, for taking the time to join us. And if you didn't get it from watching this conversation with us, you should definitely make a point of watching the documentaries, because they're well worth your time.
Yeah, for sure.
For full uncut episodes of the Unauthorized Disclosure podcast, go to patreon.com/unauthorizeddisclosure or go to thedissenter.org and become a subscriber.